They snap the ball. Lamar steps up, throws, and it's caught. One-handed grab, Isaiah Likely down the sideline, plunges into the end zone.
That's a touchdown.
For a touchdown on 4th and 7.
Steve Levy on the call, ESPN Radio. Isaiah Likely, 35-yard touchdown reception there. One of two on the day for him. Lamar Jackson, 18 of 31, 321 yards, 5 touchdowns. Quarterback rating of 158.3, 56-19. Ravens destroy the playoff-bound Miami Dolphins, M&T Bank Stadium. When Lamar on Christmas Day outplayed Brock Purdy, took the lead in the MVP race, this cemented the most valuable player that performance because he didn't even play in the finale against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan News from the Nest. So with that performance and many others like it, Vinny, Lamar won his second most valuable player award.
Bob, you know what's kind of interesting about that before I get into it? Just because you mentioned that, you know, like against Miami, which was the last game that he played, you know, he had 5 touchdowns in that game and 158 quarterback rating. So, and the week before, you like you said, San Fran, he had 2 touchdowns. And in 19... against the Jets, week 14, Bob, second to last game he played, 5 touchdown passes in that one. And then the following week against Cleveland, 3 touchdowns. So, I mean, his last 2 games in 19, he had 8 touchdowns, a kind of like exclamation point.
Sure.
So, in 19 overall, Lamar, 265 of 401, 3,127 yards, 66.1%. Averaged 7.8 per completion. 36 touchdowns, which was a freakish thing. 6 picks. 23 sacks. Quarterback rating of 113.3. And he had 176 rushes for 1,206 yards. Averaged 6.9 per rush with 7 rushing touchdowns and a long of 47. Now in 2023... he was 307 of 457, and for 3,678 yards, 67.2%. So far, Bob, he's better in every category. 8.0 average, 24 touchdowns, 7 picks, 37 sacks, and in 19, we said 23. Had a 102.7 quarterback rating. Had 148 rushes. So pretty much 30 less rushes than in 19. 821 yards, average 5.5, which is 6.9. 5 touchdowns, a long of 30. So I looked at some stuff which was pretty interesting. I put down games over 30 pass attempts in 2019 and including the playoffs. In 2019, he had 6. In 2023, 9. And you kind of figure that with the new offense, with Todd Monken's offense, they're going to throw the ball, more weapons. Average 200 pass yards, over 200 pass yards. 2019, 10. 2023, 11. That wouldn't surprise me a little bit. He had quite a few in 19. How about over 300? 2019, 2. 2023, 3. Over 70% completion, 6 in 19. 9 in 23. So that's pretty good job by Lamar there. 3 or more touchdown passes. What year is better, Bob? 8, 19, or 23? 3 or more touchdown passes.
We led the NFL in 19, like you said, 36. We just talked about the fiver there. I'm going to go 19.
Yep. 8-3. Wow. I mean, that one was surprising. 3 more, 8. He had 3 or more touchdown passes in 8 games, basically his first year starting. Interceptions for the season, 6 and 7. Outstanding. 3 or more sacks in a game. I told you this one. Norm, which one? Norm, what do you think? 3 or more sacks in a game, 19 or 23?
Definitely got sacked more this past year. Noticeable difference in the O-line.
No, yeah. In 19, Norm, 3. This year, 10. 10. Oh, he, Ronnie Stanley sucked.
He got sacked 3 times 10 games this past
season? 3 or more times. 10 times.
Well, hence the 37 sacks, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, you figure Ronnie Stanley was terrible. They were alternating the left tackle and right tackle. Your center was a stud. And to me, it was more about the tackles than anything else.
Yeah, and we saw in the playoff game.
No doubt.
Win a championship game, rather, when he coughed it up.
Quarterback rating over 100. What year is better, Bob?
I'm going to go 19.
Yep. 9-19, 7-23. Rushes over 10 attempts, including the playoffs.
It's got to be 19.
Yeah. 10. It's closer than I thought. 10-7.
Okay. Yeah, because he rushed, what, 1,200 yards during the regular season in 2019.
Now, rush over 100 yards. 19.
No doubt.
6-19. And 2-23. Longest run over 20 yards. 8 of them in 19, 6-23. But like I said earlier, the longest run in 23 was 30. There wasn't, you know, they weren't long like 47-19. He had a lot more longer double-digit runs than...
Maybe, because 19, maybe his signature play was that Bengals game where he was spinning and juking, and that was at least, that might have been that 47-yarder you were talking about.
Games less than an 80 quarterback rating. In most cases, they lose those games.
Well, they lost 3 that he played in. I'll say last year.
Yeah, 2023 he had 5. 2019 he had 4. And both of them, you know, both were playoff losses. Yeah, like he had, Bob, you know who he has really struggled against in 19 and in 23?
The Browns.
Kansas City. He had in 2019, he had a 70 quarterback rating, 3 sacks, 1 touchdown, 51% completion. He was 22 of 43. Bob, something against Kansas City, they throw the hell out of it.
That was, if I'm not mistaken, the third game of the
year.
Yes, it was. And then they lost the next week to Cleveland didn't lose again until the playoffs.
But, Bob, I mean, because he played, the Pittsburgh game, he had 3 picks in that one. But against Kansas City in the playoffs, he had 54% completion, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, 4 sacks. So he's been sacked 7 times against the Chiefs. Quarterback rating in 19, 70.6, and this past year, 75. And he threw it 37 times. So he's thrown over 70 times in 2 games against the Chiefs. They just throw the hell out of the ball against the Chiefs. So that was a comparison of the 2 MVP seasons. And tomorrow what I'm working on is when Roquan came in, how it affected Patrick Queen, and then Josh Bynes was a starter for those first 8 games, how many tackles he had in the first 8 games, and then what did Queen have opposite him compared to when Roquan was there and what happened with Queen.
Got NFL lunch coming up at 12:45. We're going to get back to Lamar, Vinny, and talk about what he needs to do this year two, Todd Monken's offense, featured back at Derrick Henry, some additions to the passing game, but the offensive line, we talked 37 sacks. We're sitting here on July 1st. Less than 3 weeks away from the start of camp, and we don't know who the 5 starters are yet. And Harbsy said he wanted it decided by, what, week 2 of training camp?
At the latest.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen here. 5880-1057, the fan here on this Monday. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw is on the other side of the glass. Orioles are off today in Seattle. 3-game series starts tomorrow night. Grayson Rodriguez, George Kirby. Ravens start training camp in a matter of weeks. NBA free agency frenzy is going crazy. NHL draft was this past weekend. And lots of other things going on as well. We'll get to the sports stuff momentarily. Right now, let's count that early week money by ourselves.
All right, the Dow is up 56. The S&P is up 10. NASDAQ is up 116. DraftKings down $1.44. Under Armour's down 21 cents to 632.
We'll start here in the NFL, where the Raiders, they're not going to be good this year. I can tell you that much with confidence. But what I don't have confidence in is who starts at quarterback for them. That remains a bit of a mystery. Aiden O'Connell, he showed flashes here and there when he started 10 games last year, but nothing overall that suggests that he's a budding star. Meanwhile, they brought in Gardner Minshew as a free agent, a guy who's been a backup throughout his career, but is coming off a quality season where he had to step in for an injured Anthony Richardson. The betting markets on who will be the week one starter for the Raiders have Minshew as the favorite right now, but Vinny Byers-Sell, in a season that's already over before it starts, it would be more beneficial to see exactly what you have with O'Connell before turning things to Minshew.
I think they saw a lot of McConnell last year. I think they're going to go with who can help them win games. So I will buy that.
Sell that. All right, over to baseball here. We are halfway through the season. Both the AL and NL are full of mediocre teams. In fact, seven teams in the National League are within five games of a wild card spot right now, including the 39-46 Cubs, pretty well under 500 there. The inclusion of a third wild card spot within the past couple years has changed things significantly. Just look at last year, both the Marlins and the Diamondbacks made the playoffs with records just six games over 500. That didn't seem to be an issue for Arizona, though, as they made it to the World Series. But it seems, you know, there might not be the most movement at this year's deadline, which means the mediocrity could continue through the end of the regular season. So, Bob, buy or sell, under the current playoff format, we will see a team with a losing record make the playoffs at some point in the future.
I'm going to sell that. Now, I think someone might not be an ideal 82-80, but I don't see a sub-500 team reaching the postseason. And yes, parity is something that you want. And by the way, I'm cool with this expanded playoff field.
Yeah, me too.
As long as the Orioles are in it, that's all that matters. But no, I don't see it. I mean, the NFL's had a couple of teams make the playoffs with losing records. NBA's had many. And the NHL too. But I don't think baseball's gotten to that level just yet.
We'll go back to the NFL here. Justin Jefferson, the unquestioned top wide receiver in the game right now. His contract reflects that. But what about the rest of the talent in the league? How would you rank spots 2 through 10 or 2 through 20? A recent CBS Sports list has attempted to do just that. And Brandon Ayuk comes in at number 8 after posting a career high, a lot of career highs in 2023, career high in yardage. He also had 7 touchdowns. He's surpassed Debo Samuel in that San Francisco offense the past 2 years in terms of yards, both the only years that he's been over 1,000, though, in his career. So Vinny, buy or sell, Ayuk already top 10 at this point in his career with so much wide receiver talent across the league.
I'll buy it. I'll buy it. He's had some good years. I keep reading where he's going to get traded to either Washington or Pittsburgh.
And he wants $30
million? He wants to be compensated like all the other receivers.
All they can do is say no. You can ask.
I think they've said no.
Go back to Major League Baseball. The Brewers, they've maintained success this year despite having more than their fair share of pitching injuries. This has led them to enlist the help of a former Cy Young winner, although it's not the flashy one you might be thinking of. Dallas Keuchel, now part of the picture there in Milwaukee, 36 years old, only thrown a little under 45 innings at the major league level over the past couple years, and he made his debut with the Brewers last week. It was not good. 5 earned runs allowed in 4 innings, certainly not ideal, but his AAA numbers prior to getting a promotion and joining the Brewers in a trade, they were a little more encouraging, a sub-4 ERA. Buy or sell, Bob, Keuchel can help Milwaukee in some capacity, whether it's starting or bullpen.
I'm going to go ahead and sell that. I think he's been on the downward slope for a few seasons now. There's a reason that he was looking for work to begin with. I think Dallas Keuchel's best days, which were in Houston, are behind him.
And lastly, here in the NFL, this year's draft was not a strong one for running backs. No first rounders, so the name recognition not quite there. But who will be the best from those that did get picked? Chris Trapasso, the NFL writer, he has selected Trey Benson, a Florida State product, as his pick for the most productive, or will be the most productive, as a rookie. His reasoning, well, there is a lack of mileage at Florida State, and Oregon for that matter, that leaves him fresh for his transition to the NFL, and he'll only be competing with James Conner for carries with the Cardinals. Vinny, are you buying or selling that Trey Benson will have the quickest road to success among his rookie running back peers?
I'm going to sell it because there's always somebody that comes out of the blue somewhere that does great. Now, Benson, he's got a good chance because the kid from Texas, I don't think he's going to be ready. You know, he had the knee. So, talent-wise, he's a talented guy. But I'll pick the field.
College basketball news real quick, and it's nothing major. Jeff Borzello, ESPN.com, has his updated way too early top 25. Came out today.
Okay.
Number one, Kansas. All you Bill Self fans, get the haterade going. Alabama 2, UConn 3, Houston 4, and Gonzaga, ooh, get that haterade going. Coming in number 5. Coming in others receiving votes, Maryland.
I would Duke's got the number 1 kid coming in. I would imagine that they're probably in the top 10.
Duke is 8.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's what's happening here in college hoops, as we're still months away from that. But as we know, with the passage of time, training camp starting in a couple of weeks, we'll be breaking down Maryland's roster. Recruiting is happening. AAU circuit, as we talked about last hour with Dave LaMonaco. But Maryland has kind of been in that fringy 23 to right on the outside looking in. But Joe Lunardi just did his latest bracketology a week or so ago, and he's got Maryland on the outside looking in. So people not buying the Turtles yet. They had a lot of expectations going into the last year. Colossal failures. Yeah. I mean, the season ended with an embarrassing loss in the Big Ten tournament. Rosters changed just a little bit, but we'll see how things all work out for the old basketball team. We're the flagship home of your Maryland Terps. Orioles are off today, first place by percentage points in the American League East. Tomorrow, taking on the first place team in the American League West, the Seattle Mariners. Grayson Rodriguez going for win number 10 against George Kirby. But when we come back, talk more about this Ravens schedule, and in particular, the opponents on it. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, playoff team last year, won a game. As a matter of fact, Scott Reynolds' Peter Report will talk about their offseason and Baker Mayfield's renaissance as a quarterback, a winning quarterback in the National Football League. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan here on this Monday. You want to get in, you can at 410-583-1057. Trying to track down Scott Reynolds' Peter Report. Talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Ravens go there on a Monday night, October the 21st. So as the Ravens get a lot of a national TV attention, 8:20 start the season against Kansas City, 4:25 it's at Dallas, but it's that national game of the week thingy there. Then Sunday night against Buffalo, then the Tampa game, then you got Thursday against Cincinnati, 8:15 then the Harbaugh on the 25th, Thanksgiving week.
I hope both teams are like have great records, Bob, going in.
Then you got the Eagles, 4:25 here. And then who knows what's going to happen in the month of December. But what's interesting as I look at it now about the Ravens' schedule for this season, 1-2-3 Right now, that's all it is. 3 1 o'clock home games. So a lot of late afternoon or primetime extravaganzas. And that's part of the equation. When you're successful, you get that sort of love. And that game against Tampa will be part of the love fest. And here to talk about the Buccaneers playoff team from 2023 with Pewter Report. Let's welcome in Scott Reynolds. Scott, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here in Baltimore.
Happy to do it, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. Just looking at the zany schedule for the Ravens, getting a lot of national TV attention. But Tampa's going to be part of that equation. But a lot of different things to get into with this team. They bring in Baker Mayfield last year. I believe he danced the dance with the Ravens a little bit there before he finally settled with the Buccaneers, got to the playoffs, won a game, got paid. Take us back as you're covering the team. Baker comes in and how things just kind of evolved, turning into a very successful year with the Buccaneers.
Well, he knew that this was going to be kind of his last chance at a starting job. You only get so many shots to start in the NFL, and then you're relegated to just career backup status. Then you become Andy Dalton, right? Even the former first-round picks, you get so many shots, so many bites at the apple, and then that's it. So Baker Mayfield went from being the face of the franchise in Cleveland to on his fourth team in one calendar year, because he spent time with the Panthers and the Rams in 2022 and then the Buccaneers in 2023. And he made the most of it. One thing that really stood out was his natural leadership ability, because he was in a competition for the starting job with Kyle Trask, a second-round pick out of Florida a couple years ago. And the first thing he did during the OTAs was he started doing calisthenics to start practice with the defense. He ingratiated himself to the defensive line, and he wasn't really hanging with the offensive players at the start of practices. And I think that was a signal to everybody, hey, I don't want to be just the quarterback. I don't want to be the leader of the offense. I want to be a team captain. I want everybody at one Buccaneer place to follow me. And he won the training camp battle. And really went on to having a career season, 4,000 yards passing, 28 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. It just a remarkable year in learning a new offense with a new offensive coordinator, doing it for the first time in Dave Canales, who's now at the Panthers, of course. And he had an immediate connection with Mike Evans, a career year for Mike Evans in terms of 1,000 yards to start a career for 10 straight seasons at age 30. And helped Evans cash in on a big deal, and Baker cashed in on a big deal himself. And I think that the connection with he and Liam Cohen, who comes over from the Rams, they spent some time together the last 5 weeks of the 2022 season, is strong. And there's a lot of carryover from what Canales ran last year to what Liam Cohen's going to run this year. So I think the Buccaneers can hit the ground running. They've added some new weapons. Everybody's back that Baker threw to last year. So there's a chance for this Buccaneer offense to elevate.
Now, Scott, with Baker Mayfield, I guess the preconceived notion for some is he's maybe off-putting personality-wise. I mean, I've never spoken to the guy before, but we've seen, some of the interviews, and he can, he tells it like it is, I guess is the best way to say it. Was that something that maybe was anticipated by his future teammates, that he was going to come in here and kind of be maybe this surly dude who might not fit in well with the team chemistry aspect?
Well, I think that year where he was basically going from the face of the franchise in Cleveland to a journeyman, I think that humbled him pretty quickly. And he's older now. He's more mature. He came to Tampa Bay with 6 years of starting experience in the league. And I think that he really wanted to make some positive with the Buccaneers players. He did just that. And so that was a successful season for him, and he has no reason to change his demeanor. If anything, he wants to keep going with that situation where he's no longer maybe surly or controversial. But you can still get a really good quote from him when it comes to his height, when it comes to the fact that the Buccaneers for a second straight season are not picked to win the NFC South, despite the fact that Tampa Bay has won 3 straight NFC South championships last year. It was Derek Carr going to the Saints. The national media made the Saints the darlings of the NFC South, and they were projected to win the division. That didn't happen. This year, of course, it's Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta. Now, all of a sudden, the national media pundits are, forgetting about the Buccaneers and crowning the Saints or the Falcons as the NFC South champion. So, to me, I think that Baker Mayfield has always played well when he has a chip on his shoulder. That was the case last year. It benefited him personally. It benefited the team even more. And I think that's going to be the case again this year. The Buccaneers are a team that is like, what do we have to do to get some respect? We won 10 games last year, including beating the Eagles. We're favored to win over us in the playoff game at Ray J. And we did just that. We took the Lions into the fourth quarter of a tie game in the divisional round of the playoffs. And, you know, when are we going to get our respect and our due? So here you've got another year with Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers having a chip on their shoulder. They love being the hunted, or I should say the hunters rather than the hunted.
Now, Scott, what is Graham Barton, their first-round pick, going to bring to the equation?
More size, more athleticism, more intelligence at the center position. You know, he was the highest graded center in terms of athleticism when you use the relative athletic score, the RAS score that Kent Lee Platt has made famous, with the perfect 10 score. This guy he reminds me of Ali Marpet, who was a great Buccaneer guard, helped them win a Super Bowl, was a Pro Bowler, then he abruptly retired at age 30, even though he had several more years in his prime. But this guy, just he's tenacious. He's a technician. He gets it. I think that this guy is going to be the next Pro Bowl center in the NFC. He and Frank Ragnow, now that Jason Kelce's retired, I could see Graham Barton sooner rather than later become a Pro Bowl center with Ragnow for years to come. And what that does is it helps the Bucs' woeful running game. They had a hard time running the ball, especially between the tackles with Robert Hainsey, an undersized center. Then it also affords, for a smaller quarterback like Baker Mayfield, it affords a little bit more protection up front. He's the tip of the spear, Graham Barton is, and it's going to be a little bit tougher to push that pocket into Baker Mayfield's lap. And I think that you're going to see some immediate dividends at the center position with the upgrade with Graham Barton.
Well, worse, you know, I mean, they took him, and he was a stud for him at right tackle. He's playing left tackle now. How's the rest of the offensive line?
Well, the Buccaneers are really strong at offensive tackle. Luke Getteke has really solidified the right tackle spot, had a breakthrough year last year. And I'm not sure if he's a potential Pro Bowler, but we had a guy in Tampa, DeMar Dotson, who was a starting right tackle for 10 years and was an above-average right tackle and just a solid, steady Eddie. And I think that's what Getteke can provide to this team going forward. I'm not saying he's not going to be a Pro Bowler at any point in time, but we know that the real Pro Bowler on that offensive line is Tristan Wirfs, who is one of the absolute best, biggest, most athletic offensive linemen. And he went to the Pro Bowl again last year, transitioning from right tackle to left tackle, not easy. I think when Trent Williams is said, you know, when his career is all said and done, Tristan Wirfs is going to be that perennial all-pro.
888-1057, the fan here on this Monday. You want to get in, you can at 410-583-1057, trying to track down Scott Reynolds. Pewter Report, talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Ravens go there on a Monday night, October the 21st. So as the Ravens get a lot of a national TV attention,
mm-hmm.
8:20, start the season against Kansas City. 4:25, it's at Dallas, but it's that national game of the week thingy there. The Sunday night against Buffalo, then the Tampa game. Then you got Thursday against Cincinnati, 8:15. Then the Harbaugh on the 25th, Thanksgiving week.
I hope both teams are have great records, Bob, going in.
Then you got the Eagles, 4:25 here. And then who knows what's going to happen in the month of December. But what's interesting as I look at it now about the Ravens' schedule for this season. 1, 2, 3. Right now, that's all it is. 3 1:00 home games. So a lot of late afternoon or primetime extravaganzas. And that's part of the equation. When you're successful, you get that sort of love, and that game against Tampa will be part of the Love Fest. And here to talk about the Buccaneers playoff team from 2023 with Pewter Report. Let's welcome in Scott Reynolds. Scott, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here in Baltimore.
Happy to do it, guys. How are you?
Doing all right. Just looking at the zany schedule for the Ravens, getting a lot of national TV attention. But Tampa's going to be part of that equation. But a lot of different things to get into with this team. They bring in Baker Mayfield last year. I believe he danced a dance with the Ravens a little bit there before he finally settled with the Buccaneers, got to the playoffs, won a game, got paid. Take us back as you're covering the team. Baker comes in and how things just kind of evolved, turning into a very successful year with the Buccaneers.
Well, he knew that this was going to be kind of his last chance at a starting job. You only get so many shots to start in the NFL, and then you're relegated to just career backup status. Then you become Andy Dalton, right? Even the former first-round picks, you get so many shots, so many bites at the apple, and then that's it. So Baker Mayfield went from being the face of the franchise in Cleveland to on his fourth team in one calendar year, because he spent time with the Panthers and the Rams in 2022 and then the Buccaneers in 2023. And he made the most of it. One thing that really stood out was his natural leadership ability, because he was in a competition for the starting job with Kyle Trask, a second-round pick out of Florida a couple years ago. And the first thing he did during the OTAs was he started doing calisthenics to start practice with the defense. He ingratiated himself to the defensive line, and he wasn't really hanging with the offensive players at the start of practices. And I think that was a signal to everybody, hey, I don't want to be just the quarterback. I don't want to be the leader of the offense. I want to be a team captain. I want everybody at one Buccaneer place to follow me. And he won the training camp battle and really went on to having a career season, 4,000 yards passing, 28 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. It just a remarkable year. And learning a new offense with a new offensive coordinator, doing it for the first time in Dave Canales, who's now at the Panthers, of course. And he had an immediate connection with Mike Evans, a career year for Mike Evans in terms of 1,000 yards to start a career for 10 straight seasons at age 30, and helped Evans cash in on a big deal, and Baker cashed in on a big deal himself. And I think that the connection with he and Liam Cohen, who comes over from the Rams, they spent some time together the last 5 weeks of the 2022 season is strong, and there's a lot of carryover from what Canales ran last year to what Liam Cohen's going to run this year. So I think the Buccaneers can hit the ground running. They've added some new weapons. Everybody's back that Baker threw to last year. So there's a chance for this Buccaneer offense to elevate.
Now, Scott, with Baker Mayfield, I guess the preconceived notion for some is he's maybe off-putting personality-wise. I mean, I've never spoken to the guy before, but we've seen, some of the interviews, and he can, he tells it like it is, I guess is the best way to say it. Was that something that maybe was anticipated by his future teammates, that he was going to come in here and kind of be maybe this surly dude who might not fit in well with the team chemistry aspect?
Well, I think that year where he was basically going from the face of the franchise in Cleveland to a journeyman, I think that humbled him pretty quickly. And he's older now. He's more mature. He came to Tampa Bay with 6 years of starting experience in the league. And I think that he really wanted to make some positive with the Buccaneers players. He did just that. And so that was a successful season for him. And he has no reason to change his demeanor. If anything, he wants to keep going with that. A situation where he's no longer maybe surly or controversial, but you can still get a really good quote from him when it comes to his height, when it comes to the fact that the Buccaneers for a second straight season are not picked to win the NFC South, despite the fact that Tampa Bay has won 3 straight NFC South championships last year. It was Derek Carr going to the Saints. The national media made the Saints the darlings of the NFC South, and they were projected to win the division. That didn't happen. This year, of course, it's Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta. Now, all of a sudden, the national media pundits are, forgetting about the Buccaneers and crowning the Saints or the Falcons as the NFC South champion. So, to me, I think that Baker Mayfield has always played well when he has a chip on his shoulder. That was the case last year. It benefited him personally. It benefited the team even more. And I think that's going to be the case again this year. The Buccaneers are a team that is like, what do we have to do to get some respect? We won 10 games last year, including beating the Eagles. We're favored to win over us in the playoff game at Ray J. And we did just that. We took the Lions into the fourth quarter of a tie game, the divisional round of the playoffs. And, when are we going to get our respect and our due? So here you've got another year with Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers having a chip on their shoulder. They love being the hunters rather than the hunted.
Now, Scott, what is Graham Barton, their first-round pick, going to bring to the equation?
More size, more athleticism, more intelligence at the center position. You know, he was the highest graded center in terms of athleticism when you use the relative athletic score, the RAS score that Kent Lee Platt has made famous with the perfect 10 score. This guy is, he reminds me of Ali Marpet, who was a great Buccaneer guard, helped them win a Super Bowl, was a Pro Bowler, then he abruptly retired at age 30, even though he had several more years in his prime. But this guy just, he's tenacious. He's a technician. He gets it. I think that this guy is going to be the next Pro Bowl center in the NFC. He and Frank Ragnow, now that Jason Kelce's retired, I could see Graham Barton sooner rather than later become a Pro Bowl center with Ragnow for years to come. And what that does is it helps the Bucs' woeful running game. They had a hard time running the ball, especially between the tackles with Robert Hainsey, an undersized center. Then it also affords, for a smaller quarterback like Baker Mayfield, it affords a little bit more protection up front. He's the tip of the spear, Graham Barton is, and it's going to be a little bit tougher to push that pocket into Baker Mayfield's lap. And I think that you're going to see some immediate dividends at the center position with the upgrade with Graham Barton.
Well, worse, you know, I mean, they took him, and he was a stud for him at right tackle. He's playing left tackle now. How's the rest of the offensive line?
Well, the Buccaneers are really strong at offensive tackle. Luke Getteke has really solidified the right tackle spot, had a breakthrough year last year. And I'm not sure if he's a potential Pro Bowler, but we had a guy in Tampa, DeMar Dotson, who was a starting right tackle for 10 years and was an above-average right tackle and just a solid, steady Eddie. And I think that's what Getteke can provide to this team going forward. I'm not saying he's not going to be a Pro Bowler at any point in time, but we know that the real Pro Bowler on that offensive line is Tristan Wirfs, who is one of the absolute best, biggest, most athletic offensive linemen. And he went to the Pro Bowl again last year, transitioning from right tackle to left tackle, not easy. I think when Trent Williams is said, you know, when his career is all said and done, Tristan Wirfs is going to be that perennial all-pro at left tackle in the NFC.
Now, Scott, can Godwin and Evans, even as they get older, can they still keep putting up the numbers like they put up?
I think so. Chris Godwin's going back into the slot this year. That's where he thrived when Bruce Arians came to town in 2019. He kind of made Godwin Larry Fitzgerald and said, you're going to play the slot, and we're going to run the offense through you. Mike Evans does what he does best, plays on the outside as that big, tall X receiver, the red zone threat. But we're going to see more 3-by-1 sets, kind of like what the Rams do with their wide receivers. Liam Cohen's bringing that to Tampa. And so as you get older, you know, you lose maybe that half a step. I'm not going to say lost a step. Maybe you lose half a step. Maybe you lose a little bit of initial quickness in and out of your brakes as you build up the mileage on your tires. And I think that the bunch formations will allow for some quicker, easier, freer releases for Evans and Godwin this year and also going forward. That's going to help them gain some separation naturally off the snap, create some confusion with those defensive backs, trying to figure out which receiver is going where. And then you've got some bigger bodies with those guys. Now, Godwin's in a contract year, but Evans is signed for 2 more years. And Mike Evans, at some point in time, he's not going to be a 1,000-yard receiver, right? But he can still be what Keyshawn Johnson was for Tampa Bay during its Super Bowl season back in 2002. You know, a 700-800-yard guy that's a big possession receiver that can box out guys and go up and high point the ball. So when Mike Evans becomes that guy, that 700-yard receiver rather than the 1,000-yard receiver, he still brings value. He can still catch double-digit touchdowns because of his size and leaping ability. In the Buccaneers, they have restocked the receiver position a little bit. There'll be a big emphasis on which receiver is going to be wide receiver 3, Trey Palmer, last year's rookie, or is it going to be Jalen McMillan, who was drafted from Washington in the 3rd round this year? That would be probably the primo training camp battle because – in Liam Cohen's offense, it's a 3-wide-receiver set offense, so that number 3 receiver is going to be a starter.
Now, defensively, what's the biggest question marks they have?
I think at cornerback and outside linebacker. Shaq Barrett is gone. The team decided to move on from him at age 31. Barrett will be 32 this year, and he's just kind of like lost a step. Matter of fact, he tore his Achilles chasing down Lamar Jackson 2 years ago on Thursday night and has not been the same player since. So they moved on from him. Yaya Diaby, the 3rd-round pick from Louisville, emerged as the leading sacker with 7.5 sacks. But they've got a lot of choices about who's going to replace Barrett Is it going to be second-round pick Chris Braswell, who played opposite Dallas Turner at Alabama? Is it going to be Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, the former first-round pick out of Washington several years ago, who's in a contract year? Is it going to be someone like Marquise Watts, who is an undrafted free agent who became a pass-rushing specialist last year? Is it going to be Randy Gregory if he shows up? The veteran pass rusher was a no-show at mandatory minicamp and OTAs, so the team's a little uncertain about whether he wants to play football or not. They have some talented choices there. They lack experience outside of Tryon-Shoyinka, and he's topped out at 5 sacks, but will he be motivated in the contract year to really step up and give the Bucs a 1-2 punch opposite Diaby? Then I think the other thing is cornerback. They traded Carlton Davis to Detroit. Zion McCollum steps up. He's an extremely fast, tall, athletic corner who will play opposite Jamel Dean. But where's the depth? Is it going to be Bryce Hall, the cornerback that they imported from the Jets? Is it going to be Josh Hayes, an unheralded gunner who was a sensational special teams player last year as a rookie? They're a little thin at the cornerback position, especially when it comes to experience. So finding that pass rusher, finding that cornerback to be the number three corner in case there's an injury, those are the things Todd Bowles will be looking for in training camp.
Scott Reynolds, PewterReport.com, talking Tampa Bay October 21st. They will be hosting the Ravens on Monday Night Football. Scott, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your summer. Training camp's only a couple of weeks away. We'll be talking to you in the fall, I'm sure.
Looking forward to it. Thanks so much,
Scott.
For having
me. You got it. Scott Reynolds, everybody. We'll come back, reset the program for you. Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Talk some baseball with him. Trade deadline stuff as that's creeping up right around the corner. American League East report. Busy weekend in the division. Orioles lost last night, but they did take 3 out of 4 from the defending world champions. And then NFL lunch coming up at 1:30. Talk more about Lamar and coexisting with Derrick Henry. I don't foresee any problems. We'll hear what Vinny has to say. Bob Nightingale, USA Today, joining us top of the hour. Talk a little baseball with him. Trade deadline looming. All-Star game, couple of weeks. Get your votes in. Second phase. You can vote one time. But a bunch of Orioles are to be chosen from. So get in and do that. American League East report coming up at 1:15. Quiet day on the diamond in Major League Baseball on this Monday. And we'll give you the schedule. Updated standings as well. And then we've got NFL lunch coming up here at 1:30 as we talk about Lamar and Derrick Henry coexisting together in the backfield. Yep. Todd Monken, and we talked about Lamar's MVP stats comparing 19 to 23. What does he need to do to keep himself in said conversation here in 2024 with maybe, well, he did lose the weight, which was always a talking point.
Right.
What, he dropped 15 pounds is what we're hearing?
When you go out there, Bob, you definitely, it's noticeable.
And we're guessing it's because, well, he said he wanted to be more elusive. What does that imply? That, man, this offensive line might suck and I might be running for my life. Or when I do hit the road, I want to start out running angles like I did back in 2019.
Yeah, I think that he's down to 5.5 yards per carry. And his longest run is 30 yards. So I'm guessing in his mind, Bob, he thinks he can get faster and quicker by doing that. And like you said, being able to, because he's probably wondering now, why am I getting caught so much?
Yeah. You know? Why is this linebacker catching me? Now, we just talked to Scott Reynolds, and as we said, they'll be taking on the Ravens October the 21st, Monday night. But Washington, they open their season Tampa at home against the Commanders. I mean, and he said the disrespect factor because everybody's picking Atlanta to win that division. But I think Tampa kind of proved themselves to be worthy. And look, I've always been kind of a Baker Mayfield fan.
Yeah, you like it. I liked him ever since the State Farm commercials.
Yeah, but you could see where some people might view him to be a little on the D-bag side.
Yeah.
Because he gets testy at interviews and he could dismiss you and all of that. But you know, Scott's point's a great one. I mean, if you don't get humbled being on 4 teams in a year, then you're just some sort of narcissistic goofball who just is living in some sort of oblivious fantasy land.
Yeah. Bob, I didn't like him when he put the flag in when he was at Oklahoma.
That was that Ohio State. Well, yeah. Obviously, there was a lot of trash talking. And what, Kansas, he went to shake hands and they refused to shake his hand. And he went out and just kind of went crazy in that game. But I think Tampa's a team. The AFC's stronger as a conference than the NFC. So they're part of the equation. They have Washington, then they're at Detroit, and Detroit's going to be one of the favorites. And then they host Denver and Philly. So three home games in their first four. And then they have Atlanta there on a Thursday night. And then they go to New Orleans by the middle. By the time they face the Ravens, we're going to have a pretty good idea of what Tampa's going to be all about here heading into late October.
Carolina's still struggling.
Yeah.
New Orleans has got their own issues.
I mean, are we buying consistent Derek
inconsistent Carr quarterback? Or no? So you got Cousins and you got Baker. So I think that division comes down to Atlanta and Tampa in that one.
And a lot of pressure is going to be on Kirk Cousins.
No doubt, live up to the contract.
Yeah.
With the rookie sitting right there.
Drafted Penix, and your first time things go maybe south for him, then you got your all by their own doing, by the way, built-in quarterback controversy.
No doubt. And both are going to get paid. Well, basically what they have is if Cousins is what they think he is, then they're going to let Penix develop for a couple. Look at what Jordan Love did. The only negative on that is Penix is already, what, 25?
Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah, he's a little bit older.
But Tampa's going to be an interesting thing to follow, and we'll be talking about them throughout the year, certainly as we get into the build-up for said game. Training camp starts in a couple of weeks. We talked about this earlier with Kyle Phoenix from Baltimore Beatdown. Rookies report on the 13th, but veterans, injured veterans and quarterbacks report on the 15th. And we brought this up maybe the first segment of the show, or definitely in the first half hour. It would probably behoove a couple of veterans to get there as early as possible, and Rashad Bateman in particular to get acclimated to Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I would think like Bateman needs to be there, Bob. I would say like an Armour Davis and Pepe Williams, they need to be there. You know, guys that have missed a lot of time that could use some extra work. Those types of guys. If I'm in competition, Bob, if I'm a Filele or somebody, I'm there. I'm trying to get every advantage I can get.
Yeah, I mean, Filele, if we've talked about before, this stage of his career, he's not entrenched. I think they would probably view that as somewhat of a disappointment given his draft status. And and Ben Cleveland's, what, 4 years in now? And he's fighting for a spot? I mean, a couple of drafted linemen who still have a lot to prove here because more of the Rosengarten anticipation is that if he's not starting maybe this year, certainly by next year, you know, they could have some problemos. And same with Saleh.
Yep.
Who could maybe maybe the hidden gem of them all there when it's all said and done.
And then Ajabo should be there. He should definitely be there. So, yeah, there's some guys that I would think, I mean, if I'm a wide receiver and my quarterbacks are there, I got to go. You know, I mean, just to me, it makes too much sense.
Bateman should show up with a name tag. Hi.
And likely I'm should Rashad. Be there. Likely should be there.
Yeah.
Kohler should be there. Andrews doesn't need to be there yet. But Zay Flowers should be, Aguilar should be there. What other, Wallace should be there. You know, all those types. They should have, like, damn, we got this many guys here.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan NFL Lunch coming up at 1:30. Stay tuned for that. American League East report at 1:15. But we'll talk baseball. Bob Nightingale, USA Today, who are some of these hot trade commodities that are going to be well sought after. And the Orioles are certainly going to be looking for some pitching here. Bob Nightingale, USA Today, joining us top of the hour. Talk a little baseball with him. Trade deadline looming. All-Star game, couple of weeks. Get your votes in. Second phase. You can vote one time. But a bunch of Orioles are to be chosen from. So get in and do that. American League East report coming up at 1:15. Quiet day on the diamond in Major League Baseball on this Monday. And we'll give you the schedule. Updated standings as well. And then we've got NFL Lunch coming up here at 1:30 as we talk about Lamar and Derrick Henry coexisting together in the backfield. Yep. Todd Monken, and we talked about Lamar's MVP stats comparing 19 to 23. What does he need to do to keep himself in said conversation here in 2024 with maybe, well, he did lose the weight, which was always a talking point.
Right.
what, he dropped 15 pounds is what we're hearing?
When you go out there, Bob, you definitely, it's noticeable.
And we're guessing it's because, well, he said he wanted to be more elusive. What does that imply? That, man, this offensive line might suck and I might be running for my life. Or when I do hit the road, I want to start out running angles like I did back in 2019.
Yeah, I think that he's down to 5.5 yards per carry. And his longest run is 30 yards. So I'm guessing in his mind, Bob, he thinks he can get faster and quicker by doing that. And like you said, being able to, because he's probably wondering now, why am I getting caught so much?
Yeah. You know? Why is this linebacker catching me? Now, we just talked to Scott Reynolds, and as we said, they'll be taking on the Ravens October the 21st, Monday night. But Washington, they open their season Tampa at home against the Commanders. I mean, and he said the disrespect factor because everybody's picking Atlanta to win that division. But I think Tampa kind of proved themselves to be worthy. And look, I've always been kind of a Baker Mayfield fan.
Yeah, you like it. I liked him ever since the State Farm commercials.
Yeah, but you could see where some people might view him to be a little on the D-bag side.
Yeah.
Because he gets testy at interviews and he could dismiss you and all of that. But, you know, Scott's point's a great one. I mean, if you don't get humbled being on four teams in a year, then you're just some sort of narcissistic goofball who just is living in some sort of oblivious fantasy land.
Yeah. Bob, I didn't like him when he put the flag in when he was at Oklahoma.
That was Ohio State. Well, obviously there was a lot of trash talking. And what, Kansas, he went to shake hands and they refused to shake his hand. And he went out and just kind of went crazy in that game. But I think Tampa's a team. The AFC's stronger as a conference than the NFC. So they're part of the equation. They have Washington, then they're at Detroit, and Detroit's going to be one of the favorites. And then they host Denver and Philly. So three home games in their first four. And then they have Atlanta there on a Thursday night. And then they go to New Orleans by the middle. By the time they face the Ravens, we're going to have a pretty good idea of what Tampa's going to be all about here heading into late October.
Carolina's still struggling.
Yeah.
New Orleans has got their own issues.
I mean, are we buying consistent, Derek
inconsistent Carr quarterback?
No?
So you got Cousins and you got Baker. So I think that division comes down to Atlanta and Tampa in that one.
And a lot of pressure is going to be on Kirk Cousins. Live up to the contract.
Yeah. With the rookie sitting right there.
Drafted Penix, and your first time things go maybe south for him. Then you got your all by their own doing, by the way, built-in quarterback controversy.
No doubt. And both are going to get paid. Well, basically what they have is if Cousins is what they think he is, then they're going to let Penix develop for a couple. Look at what Jordan Love did. The only negative on that is Penix is already, what, 25?
Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah, he's a little bit older.
But Tampa's going to be an interesting thing to follow, and we'll be talking about them throughout the year, certainly as we get into the build-up for said game. Training camp starts in a couple of weeks. We talked about this earlier with Kyle Phoenix from Baltimore Beatdown. Rookies report on the 13th, but injured veterans and quarterbacks report on the 15th, and we brought this up maybe the first segment of the show, or definitely in the first half hour. It would probably behoove a couple of veterans to get there as early as possible, and Rashad Bateman in particular to get acclimated to Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I would think like Bateman needs to be there, Bob. I would say like an Armour Davis and Pepe Williams, they need to be there. You know, guys that have missed a lot of time that could use some extra work. Those types of guys. If I'm in competition, Bob, if I'm a Filele or somebody, I'm there. I'm trying to get every advantage I can get.
Yeah, I mean, Filele, if we've talked about before, this stage of his career, he's not entrenched. I think they would probably view that as somewhat of a disappointment given his draft status. And Ben Cleveland's, what, 4 years in now, and he's fighting for a spot? I mean, a couple of drafted linemen who still have a lot to prove here because more of the Rosengarten anticipation is that if he's not starting maybe this year, certainly by next year, you know, they could have some problemos, and same with Saleh.
Yep.
Who could maybe maybe the hidden gem of them all there when it's all said and done.
And then a Jabo should be there. He should definitely be there. So, yeah, there's some guys that I would think, I mean, if I'm a wide receiver and my quarterbacks are there, I got to go. You know, I mean, just to me, it makes too much sense.
Bateman should show up with a name tag. Hi.
And Likely I'm should Rashad. Be there. Likely should be there.
Yeah.
Kohler should be there. Andrews doesn't need to be there yet. But Zay Flowers should be. Aguilar should be there. What other? Wallace should be there. You know, all those types. They should have, like, damn, we got this many guys here.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan NFL Lunch coming up at 1:30. Stay tuned for that. American League East report at 1:15. But we'll talk baseball. Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Who are some of these hot trade commodities that are going to be well sought after? And the Orioles are certainly going to be looking for some pitching here.